A bill in the state legislature would ban transgender teenagers from participating in girls' sports. It's a bill sponsored by Republican State Representative Nancy Bartow that's particularly aimed at transgender women who are genetically identified as male. There are similar bills being debated in Idaho and Alabama, and a family in Connecticut is suing over a policy that allows transgender people to be included in school sports. Arizona's bill, dubbed the Save Women Sports Act, has caused an uproar from those on the left who say it's only meant to discriminate against transgender youth. But those in support say it's about fairness for girls in sports. We'll hear from those on both sides of this debate here, but let's begin with Kathy Herod, president of the Conservative Center for Arizona Policy.
Here's why we need the Save Women Sports Act. In 1971-72, 7% of high school athletes were girls. By 2010, 41% of high school athletes were girls. Well, what changed? It was Title IX. Title IX is what was the measure that was advocated for years by all concerned about sports, solving sports inequality, leveling the playing field to ensure that girls that wanted to be active in athletics had a chance to play sports, to have parity in sports and what was available. What's happening now with allowing biological males who are transgender girls to participate in girls' sports basically threatens to undo that and do away with girls' sports teams.
How widespread do you think this is?
I think it's growing. We point to the situation in Connecticut where two boys who were competing in track and were mid-level in the boys' divisions, the next season they identified as girls, and they started taking all the records and titles from three young female athletes who the three athletes were winning track titles, they were setting records, but then they started losing to the transgender girls. And so this is about, you know, wait a minute, let's still have girls still have a chance. We do know of some instances in Arizona, so it is a problem that needs to be solved.
Transgender women who have medically transitioned have hormone levels that are in line then with cisgender women. So it's not like these are boys participating in girls' sports in that way. What would your message be to sort of a young person in that position who felt that they were transgender and wanted to transition?
Well, it's interesting because biological males still have an advantage over female athletes. And you can't deny the physical advantages. It's larger lung capacity, it's denser bones, it's muscle complexion, it's a higher red blood cell count. So there still are differences regardless of what hormones have been taken or what puberty blockers or what type of gender reassignment surgery. And I think it's important to note that tennis stars like Martina Navratilova have come out in favor of keeping girls' sports and not allowing the transgender girls to compete. And so this is an issue that I think has broad support and an understanding that you can't change all the biology and all the science.
So making this a law in this way, what effect do you think it will have on high schools and on sports that are happening here now?
Well, the intent is to allow girls to have a level playing field. And that's what this is about. This is about girls' sports, about preserving the intent of Title IX to allow girls to have a level playing field and participate in sports. And that's all that this is about.
How do you think schools should handle this then? Because as you say, if there are more young people who are transitioning, if transgender youth can't participate in girls' sports and then they can't participate in boys' sports, what should they do?
Well, there are a number of co-ed teams that the bill does not, a biological male who is transitioning to being a female can participate in co-ed sports. The Arizona Interscholastic Association offers some co-ed sports. There are a number of other leagues and opportunities that are there for co-ed sports. So biological females are permitted on female or co-ed teams, but the biological male could go play on a co-ed team. So this is not prohibiting anyone from being able to play on a sports team.
I mean, most of the sports in a high school setting, though, are going to be segregated by gender, I mean, in terms of if they want to be competitive, right?
Well, it's interesting to note on the issue that when you look at high school sports, just some of the information that volleyball nets for girls are more than 7 inches lower than for boys. The high school shot put standard weight for boys is 36% heavier for boys than for girls. The hurdle height for high school girls 100 meter is 33 inches, for boys 39 inches. Golf tees, we know, are shorter for females than for males. The girls' basketball is slightly smaller than that for a male. So we see that for a long time in sports, we have acknowledged differences between males and females in how the sports are regulated, in the kind of statistics, the size of the equipment that we've just mentioned. So this is about just let's keep things where it's girls' sports and boys' sports.
how do you measure this? And what would someone have to go through in order to prove their biology?
Well, it's not an issue of proving. I think it's important to note that high school athletes are required to take physical exams and have a doctor have, an original birth certificate as well. So the high school athlete will already have had a physical exam, would have been signed off by a doctor. That physical, you know, whatever certification would go into the Arizona Interscholastic Association or to the school, would already note what the sex was of the individual athlete. And that, it's as simple as that. So it's some of the hysteria that's being built around the bill about how it would invade someone's privacy, that's just not applicable to this bill and what it would do, because physical exams are already required for someone to participate in athletics, and that would be the process that would be followed here.
All right. Kathy Herod is the president of the Center for Arizona Policy. Kathy, thank you so much for taking the time.
Sure. Thank you.
Now for the other side of this debate, as well as some of the history behind sex testing in sports, let's turn to Victoria Jackson. She is a sports historian and clinical assistant professor of history at ASU, and we began by talking about the current stance on transgender participation in sports from governing bodies locally and at the international level.
So in an international context, our rules regarding both kind of intersex athletes, athletes with differences of sexual development, mm-hmm. and also transgender athletes are very much in the process of being made. So there is some sort of standardization in place, but that process is still evolving. Same thing with the NCAA. So typically, if it's a transgender female athlete, there are ranges that testosterone needs to be in for an athlete to prove eligibility to participate in the women's category.
You've written before, I know, about Caster Semenya, who's an interesting example of this. She's a cisgender Olympic runner, and she's not allowed often to compete in her events unless she undergoes this hormonal treatment that would sort of remove some of that testosterone. Do you see some similarities between her case and some of the issues that might come up when we see bills like this around the country?
Yes, if this bill were to become law, the process through which an athlete would come under its watch, I guess, would be one of the problematic areas. So the bill says that if one's identity is disputed, a student may establish sex by presenting a signed physician statement. That's a problem because bodies come in all shapes and sizes. They have varying levels of muscle mass, and we kind of associate different types of gender and sexual identity with varying levels of muscle. Right. So what this would mean is basically whisper campaigns are when somebody becomes subjected to this law, and would then have to go and prove by their internal and external organs, their hormonal levels, and also their genetic profile that they're biologically female.
Okay, so let's back way up and talk a little bit about the history here. Why are sports competitions segregated by gender in the first place? Has this always been true?
Yeah, well, modern sports were intended for men in their kind of moment of origin. So, you know, if we're looking at how this is a top-down system with the Olympic movement that was revitalized in the late 1890s, that was a men's only competition. And so women are kind of the afterthought. Women force their way in. They start hosting their own competitions, and then eventually the IOC reluctantly adds the women's categories of competition. And so, you know, if sport is a space in which men historically have proved their manliness, what does that make sporting women? If we equate kind of muscles with men, what does a woman with muscles mean? That's transgressive. And so, you know, in this longer history, women who develop muscles, women who are good at sport, both their sex identity and their gender identity fall under suspicion. And so beginning in the 1920s, at an international level, women would have to prove they were women and fit for the women's category. But because men prove their manliness through sport, men don't have to prove their manhood. So in its first iteration, we'd have these kind of parades where women would show their lady parts to be eligible to compete. Later on, we'd have gender verification cards, chromosomal cheek swabs. Then testosterone became the kind of marker of what made one woman. The presence of less testosterone than men. But there is no single factor that determines biological sex. And so we have all these examples historically of when women find out they have genetic disorders because of this very public kind of scrutiny of their bodies in sporting competition. The last place we should be doing this is in schools. You know, in the United States, we define sport as educational, as it should be. We learn so much when we play sports, both about ourselves and when we play sports with others. We've defined the equal opportunity to participate in school sports in the United States as a civil right. Title IX does that. And so if we're thinking about what this bill could do for a protected category of people and people who are in our schools, this bill potentially becomes harmful to people in a violation of their civil rights if they're basically denied the opportunity to play sport in this way.
So this goes back a long way. There's a lot of history here, but it sounds like the thing that strikes me about you going through that is that this has only ever been subjected to women, cisgender and transgender alike.
That's correct.
So Representative Nancy Bartow says her bill is about fairness in sports because biologically male athletes, if they were to participate in women's sports, would have some sort of inherent advantage.
Sport is a place where we celebrate exceptional achievement. We celebrate excellence in an exceptional way. The only time in which we're scrutinizing excellence and exceptional status in sport is when it relates to gender. A local athlete here, Michael Phelps, is one athlete that's often brought up to point out, you know, a particularly excellent, exceptional body that looks a little bit different from others that contributes to his sporting success.
Very long arms.
Yes, and very short legs.
Yeah.
And those in combination make him a fast swimmer. But we're never going to tell Michael Phelps, well, you can only compete in a category with people with short legs and long arms, because it's the gender part that makes people uncomfortable.
So when we talk about women in sports and fairness in women in sports, there's a long history behind that as well.
Yes. You know, this bill, the language that it uses is about protecting women and girls and making sure their participation opportunities are not harmed. If the people behind this bill are very concerned about girls' participation opportunities in Arizona, they have a great opportunity to do something much more dramatic about that, because 33% of Arizona high schools have a large gender equity gap when it comes to participation opportunities, which means about a third of Arizona high schools are likely in violation of Title IX. If the people behind this bill really wanted to do something to save women's sports, as this act is called, the Save Women's Sports Act, they could start holding high schools accountable and putting pressure on them to expand sporting opportunities for girls at the high school level.
All right, that is Victoria Jackson, a sports historian and clinical assistant professor of history at ASU. Victoria, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Lauren.